Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Today we are doing Batman, the video game. It's the only one that was ever made.
It's nice that Batman finally got a video game, and I just wish there were more of them.
It comes from a wonderful time of movie games, I think, because it doesn't have anything to do with the movie.
Like, it gets Batman right. Like, if it were really based on the movie, like, Batman would be, like, really clumsy, really slow. He'll fall through the roof, stand there, and then a bunch of dudes will, like, take turns punching at him, and Batman will just, like, catch their punches, and, like, while standing basically motionless except for his arms, like, in this game, he moves like you think Batman's gonna move.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintain with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor. Thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others. Discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it. Go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dogs power. Hey, dogs power. Hey, dogs power. Hey, dogs power.
I think that's obvious.
Hi, and welcome to another Hardcore Gaming 101 Top Games. We are doing Suzuki Bakuhatsu. This game was nominated to us by Mazen Kaiser on iTunes. It was developed by a company called Sol, S-O-L, like our son. It was published by Enix before they were Squeenix, which always surprises me. I always forget that Enix was a company before. I didn't see him around much, and then I'm like, oh yeah, Enix. And that means it was for the PlayStation 1, but quite a late release. It was about July 16th, 2000, which I believe means that you could actually have bought a PlayStation 2 and been playing great games like Tekken Tag Tournament, maybe?
Hey, man, don't knock Fanavision.
Fanavision. Exactly. Could have been playing Fanavision. I actually really like Fanavision. It's a favorite of mine. I am addicted to the flashing colorful lights in that one. But this is the PlayStation game about bombs. And, yeah, I'm Carl, and we have guests, and everyone's here.
Yeah, we're guests.
I'm a guest.
I love being a guest.
Hi, I'm Danny from Retro Pals.
And I'm Alex, also from Retro Pals.
You want to take a second to explain what you guys do for our listeners?
Sure. We stream old and weird video games on the internet, and we also make gaming history videos on YouTube. So Suzuki Bakuhatsu is pretty much up our alley.
It's Retro Pals bait. It's really weird, but really good, or at least very interesting.
Yeah.
We like things that are weird in an interesting way, and this game is definitely weird in an interesting way.
All right. Yes, this is a very impressive game. It's basically an art game in a way because it's so strange, and yet it's a proper game. Bob is also here. I don't think he introduced himself. I think he just kind of.
Hi, I'm here too.
Discreetly.
Hi, Bob.
And now
everyone else. All right. So, yes, it's Suzuki Bakuhatsu, a game where a Japanese lady who. Is she like an idol, kind of, or is she just a random lady?
They don't really say. It's very vague on her backstory.
Mm-hmm. There's like a dream sequence where she's kind of an idol, but like that's more of, it's kind of, the game is so esoteric, it's kind of hard to pin down anything about what's going on, other than the fact that there's bombs.
Yeah, in the game itself, I don't think she gets much backstory, but in real life, she's like an actress and model, and they got an actual big production company to work on this game. It's some slick stuff.
Real quick, I like to think she's under, like, some kind of witch's curse, and that's why she's constantly being threatened by bombs.
The bomb witch.
That game absolutely needed an evil cackling witch.
So, what happens is basically what we've said. You play as the Japanese lady who wakes up in the morning, and someone tries to blow up with an orange. That's
the intro of the
game. I hate
when that
happens. A delivery driver?
Manic Monday.
It's just, hey, this is for you. Thanks. And then it's ticking, and it's gonna blow up, and you gotta defuse it in 2 minutes? Is that what 2 minutes? It's not long. They get longer. The game is basically divided between surrealistic segments of a lady who constantly has very hard-to-relate-to problems, and 3D bomb defusal segments, which are basically, you have a whole little toolkit of things, and you move around a 3D space, a bomb as such, but not always strictly a bomb. Often you have to find the bomb within the space. And you have like a series of tools that you use, you know, a screwdriver, wire cutters, magnifying glass. Do you get any other tools in this game?
I'm not sure. I think it's mostly context sensitive. It's not like you have a tool belt that you take from through the entire game. But yeah, there's these self-contained stages where you have to first take apart, dismantle, and then defuse what is revealed to be a bomb eventually. Very interesting. Yeah, I guess if you were describing the gameplay, it is bomb defusal, technically.
Mm-hmm. And the bombs are increasingly insane.
We gotta talk about the bombs. They just get better and better with every stage.
It's like an orange, and then, I mean, we've all been there. You go into work with your umbrella, and you look at it, and it turns out to be a gun, and the gun is also a bomb, so of course you have to take that apart. So
that's one of my favorite sequences in, I think, a game that I have ever seen.
It's so good.
That was so good.
That part wins you over instantly once you see
it. She gets in the elevator, she's just standing there, the elevator's full of people, she looks down at her umbrella, the umbrella is actually a gun, she looks at the gun. Everyone in the elevator, yeah, they're like, ah! They all throw up their hands because suddenly she's got a gun.
Yeah.
You know what the best part is, though? The way you just described this game? Mm-hmm. There's a part where she looks at the moon. She figures out it's a bomb. That's early game. That's not even near the end.
Yeah.
It's a bomb. It's going to explode.
It does a great job of ramping up this game. Like, you think that it hit its peak ridiculousness with the moon, and then it just keeps going. Like, you think, what's the next bomb gonna be? And the answer is always something bigger and something weirder.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so when you actually defuse it, you do start like looking at the moon, and then you rotate the camera, and oh god, it's an entire, like, basically looks like a regular bomb dropped from like a plane. It's like the full like tube with I don't know, like air turbines, whatever, on the back. Like, it's just this huge, rickety-ass bomb, and you end up unscrewing it, and if you go in the wrong way, it's just like, ah, idiot, this is the wrong way! And so you gotta run out, because everything is under a really strict time limit in this game.
That's true, yeah. And, like, yeah, just the... I hesitate calling it a bomb defusal sim, because that makes it sound like it's accurate. Like, no. The moon has a giant flathead screw thing on it,
yeah.
So you can stick a screwdriver into it. It is very esoteric, very not serious, this game.
Mm-hmm. It's very clever, because, yeah, the scale of the game is nonsensical. If it's a screw hole, you can put your screwdriver in it. Doesn't matter. You've got to find that screw, or there'll be elaborate constructs on the bomb that you twist it, and then other parts of the bomb move around, and you have to be very careful, because you might just set the bomb off by accident, by screwing the wrong thing in the wrong order. And it's not unfair about it, but because you're constantly got this timer on screen, it throws a lot of words and text at you constantly. You're like, oh god, pressure, pressure, pressure. Like, it just, you feel very, oh goodness, this is very difficult. Even if you just unscrewing a... you know, a screw, the first time through the bomb especially, you don't know how many screws you've got left. You don't know how much more bomb you have, and it ticks down constantly. Sometimes it'll just randomly throw the timer down for some reason. I don't really know why. And then it'll go back up when you complete the segment just to mess with you.
One quick question. I wasn't quite sure from the footage and the... does this game make heavy use of the analog sticks?
No. Not at all.
Okay. That's a shame, because I feel like twirling the analog stick would be a really natural fit for unscrewing things.
Oh yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Instead, they just map it to the circle button, just keeping it simple.
Yeah. I kept making this mistake, because you don't press two buttons to screw different ways. You press the shoulders or the D-pad or something, and then you flip the direction you're turning the screw. More than once, I turned it the wrong way and it blew up, because I foolishly did not flip it the correct way, and I lost track of which way I was turning the screw and which way it was supposed to turn, because it doesn't obey the, if you're familiar with actual real life using screws, they usually screw in one way and screw out the other. Like, it's pretty much like a universal constant. Whereas these screws just don't care. Sometimes you got to screw them one way. Sometimes you got to screw them the other. They don't seem to care all that much.
The famous non-Euclidean screws. Yeah. These, the bomb defusal segments, I think, are handled really interestingly, because you can just unscrew a couple of screws, and then it plays this really complex, intricate animation of the parts of the object falling away and revealing something even more intricate and deadly inside. Mm-hmm. And as it does that, it does a great job of building the stakes. Like, oh no, I finally got to the part with the wires. Which one do I clip?
Yes, it gets down to the wires, as anything that has a bomb in media that has ever existed, you will get down to your red and blue wire. And if you cut the wrong one, you'll just blow up. So don't cut the wrong one. Usually it will give you a hint as to which one is correct. I think the very first bomb, it's just stupidly obvious. It puts like a danger sign on top of one of the wires, and that is indeed the danger one. Don't cut that. But for the rest of them, there tends to be a lot of text in Japanese. A lot of it is superfluous nonsense, but sometimes it will hint at what you're supposed to actually do, either...
Is there ever a point where it's just like a straight 50-50 on which one to cut?
If you don't know Japanese. Possibly
more.
Everyone
is straight 50-50.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate. It relies on language, because you can bumble your way through a lot of this game until you can't.
Yeah, like,
and that's just unfortunate. With a little tweaking, it could be accessible for everyone, but it takes a little bit to really solve some of the more complex bombs.
It's unfortunate that it is a 2000 game, because I think that would have kind of cut off it getting translated. I could definitely see this game, because it doesn't have that much to translate. You definitely could have seen it getting a translation in 98, maybe even 99. As like just a crazy quirky Japanese game.
Sure. Like Enix was bringing over its Bust-a-Move games, mm-hmm. Bust-a-Groove rather. And in Japan, it was kind of going through a weird renaissance period. It was just making these weird art games. There was Suzuki Bakuhatsu around the same time was a game called Seigare Ijiri.
Oh yeah.
Which if you don't know it, you don't know it. But if you know that name, you're like, oh my God, that game
mm-hmm.
with the weird giraffe things everywhere.
God, that game. Yeah. Yeah. That's another game that, much like Suzuki Bakuhatsu, has a really interesting aesthetic to it. Like, Suzuki Bakuhatsu, it uses a lot of really nice colors. It has a very, I guess I would say the aesthetic is very, like, the 60s, very bright. And the music is from one of the dudes behind Fantastic Plastic Machine. It's very bossa nova, a lot of orchestrated kind of 60s lounge stuff.
Yeah, it's a really tightly produced package, and that's mm-hmm. what wins you over the production quality.
I really love the stage clear music. That would make a great ringtone.
It is. It's very jolly. Mm-hmm. Very, very joyful.
I really like the character herself at the same time. When you beat a stage, she's just kind of, you get like a readout of like, you did it this quickly, you did it this, because I think the game splits or something. It gives you like different challenges if you get through the stages really quickly or something. I think there's some bonus stuff if you do it really well. But when you get through the readouts, you just kind of like, just really bored, just says, Sugoi. Like,
yeah.
Great.
She's a great contrast with the bomb defusal gameplay, because like, everything outside the bombs is presented in these series of still photographs, which are very well done. And
semi-still, they've got like a action comics, I guess, or motion comics kind of feel. Sometimes things move across, or the camera zooms around, or there's like graphic, like stuff kind of can happen. Especially if the bomb goes off, you get like a cheesy ass like bomb going off in like FMV, like just a filmed explosion.
Yeah, there's a unique one for every failure, too, so that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But Suzuki, she just, like, outside the bomb defusal, she's just kind of bored with life. Like, I guess the cutscenes reflect her ennui, maybe, like, she's wishing something cool will happen, and instead she just constantly has bombs mailed to her.
She just kind of just accepts it. This is just her life now.
Yeah, she's surprisingly bored throughout the entire thing. And I kind of love that because the world is absolutely nonsensical around her. Everything's blowing up. The moon is blowing up. Her orange is blowing up.
You get a little jaded after a while, yeah.
And she's just so much like, ah, it's another bomb. Whatever.
Big surprise.
Yeah.
She definitely really won me over. I think it was when she was doing some of the bombs. She just starts, like, humming, just, like, stupid nursery rhymes or something. She's like,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just little busy work humming to yourself while you defuse the bomb.
Like, your time is, like, counting down. It's, like, 1 minute left, and then you're going to die in an explosion. And she's just, mm-hmm.
This game has a really great soundscape. There's not really music, per se. There's just a lot of ticking, a faint heartbeat, the humming. It really does kind of add to the tension a lot. And
Sometimes they throw in a little bit of music that's, like, supposed to, I think, be in the actual scene that she's in. Like, there's, like, interstitial music or whatever. It's just kind of vocalized stuff. It's interesting, and it's very, I don't know, it's a very, very unique game that is not super easy to describe. Even watching it, you'll get it. But definitely when you're sort of in the weird pressure that the game puts on you, it's a very interesting, like, contrast, I guess, the way that everything in the game operates. Very strange.
Yeah, watching video, you don't feel the pressure, but when it's up to you to clip that wire, to unscrew that screw, you honestly do feel a little bit of anticipation, wondering if that's it, like it's all going to blow up in your face.
Mm-hmm. The sound does a really good job of building the tension, like a really good job.
It's just such simple gameplay, but they amp it up with so much presentation quality and attention to details, like,
Mm-hmm. I really like it that it's a puzzle game as such. I think it's fair to call it a puzzle game. But it's not a infinite puzzle game. You know, it's not a block game. It's not a puzzle game that's designed to be played for a long period of time or indefinitely. It's a puzzle game where each puzzle is a very specific handcrafted puzzle challenge that's quite interesting and distinct to each other. And then you beat the game and you can either, I don't know, replay it to do it faster or you're done. It's quite an expensive puzzle game in terms of production values. It doesn't feel like we came up with a good idea for a block game and we made that and you can just play it on your phone or whatever. It's a game that actually uses a medium of like, well, it's got, uses FMV stuff. It uses the actual fact that the PlayStation renders in 3D reasonably well. It uses that to make an interesting, unique puzzle game, which I really was impressed by because I can't think of anything like it.
It's true. It really stands alone. Like, even the developers' other games, they made a couple of sniper games for the Simple 1500 series. And the director is freaking Koichi Yotsui, the Strider guy. Like, what? Where does this fit into his catalog?
I guess it's kind of got a movie-ish feel to it. Strider had a lot of set pieces. That's all I've got for you.
That is true. It has a cinematic feel to it, for sure.
It's very cinematic.
That's, to an extent, this game. It's one that you should definitely check out. So anything else to say about this one that makes it worthwhile? What about some of the later bombs?
That's about all I can say about it.
I have a thought I do want to share.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
This game has never really been done since. I mean, the only game I think that's even a little bit similar is Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, and even then that's pretty different. That's not quite the same, except ostensibly about being defusing bombs. And that's a shame. If this game had come out, like, a year earlier, this could have been, like, a big Katamari-esque cult hit, I'd say.
I think part of the problem, though, is that since it didn't come out outside of Japan, it was never going to get traction. It was overshadowed by the PlayStation 2 in Japan, and, well, yeah, they didn't release it anywhere else, so...
I just think it was, like, a big victim of timing, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think Enix USA was having trouble at the time, too, so wasn't exactly going to get a localization.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe they made this game. I don't know, like, how they would have pitched this game. Like, if they didn't pitch this game and they just made it, and they're like, okay, we'll release it. Because
I really think there was some push for weirdness and just different stuff at Enix at the time, because they saw that Square was branching out of its usual comfort zone with stuff like Einhander and those other games they were producing around the time, and Enix was like, we want to do that too, except weirder. I can only assume that's what happened.
Because, let's just do this. And because, like, it's not even, I could maybe see this if this was like a pop star or something in Japan that was given a game, you know, like if she was a famous idol at the time, like the main character, I could see them, you know, working this in like she has a bad day and there's a bunch of bombs and that's like, buy it because you like the idol, but it's not that. It's just this bizarre thing where it's just like, there's going to be a bomb and it's going to keep blowing up and you got to go solve it. I really like, I forgot to mention this because it was just, to save in this game, when you beat a level, it just throws this sign at you, which is like the save sign. Yes. Like you got to turn off to yes. save, and it just flies at the screen, and you've got to work out which way you press to save.
I have no idea why they did that, except just possibly just artificially lengthen the game because well, I don't know what it adds.
I love it.
It's so weird to me. Yeah, it turns saving into like deciding yeah. whether you should go off an op ramp.
Yeah, something. You have to go to the save off ramp again. Yeah. I love the interesting aesthetics, even just in the way that you like save and the way that you know it has that wonderful musical stinger at the end of each level by the fantastic plastic machine guy. It's just so interesting.
If you don't turn off to that save, you miss the save point. Like,
yeah, you can you can keep driving down the highway and you can miss your off ramp. I kind of love that.
Yeah, you can miss the save. And then complete a level, and then you miss the save again, and mm-hmm. you're just like, oh god, the tension keeps building and building.
I really like that when it goes past again, she's just like, whoa, or something. Like, it just like blazes, like, blitzes
yeah,
past.
Yeah, it's just like whoops.
Whoa. I'm like, okay, cool. Miss the save again. But it is quite generous. If you blow up, it just lets you restart from the stage you were at, I think. It doesn't force you to go back to your save point, so.
Yeah, you can just continue.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a mean game, so I like that. Even though it pretends it's mean and some of the bombs can be quite cruel, it's not excessively so. It's a very impressive game. I'm glad this one was nominated because it was a lot of fun. It's not particularly long, is it?
It's not. No, you can beat it in like an hour, maybe two.
She's not always the best thing. I'm perfectly happy with that, but not great for a full price PlayStation release, I assume. I'm assuming that would have kind of.
There's one thing I forgot to mention I think is important. Even despite its concept, which hadn't really been done, there's actually a whole lot of variety in this game. It does do a lot to change up its formula. You've got the part where you have a rock, paper, scissors fight with a giant mech.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah!
Yep, that happens.
That part is so cool!
I like that the game doesn't play by its own rules, that it's willing to just throw out these stages that are a complete curveball.
Mm-hmm.
They have this concept that's never been done before, and they're willing to just completely abandon it anyway, just do it at once, and that's great.
It is a glorious, like, thing to see. It's absolutely worth it. It's also, it's easy to play, even if you don't speak Japanese, as long as you're willing to kind of fudge the fact that you'll probably blow up unfairly at the end of several stages. Just, you know, it's still fun to go through the defusal, and the cutscenes are not really voiced. There's a tiny bit of dialogue, but it's inconsequential. It really is. It's like,
that's true.
I gotta say,
I respect this game for its very restrained and limited but effective use of full motion video.
Yes.
There is video in the game, not just still images, and once it does, it blows your mind.
Mm-hmm. I was very surprised that it didn't go all in, because obviously the full motion video was an early PlayStation thing. Like, it was a holdover from the 3DO, and that sort of, like, well, we can't really do 3D, but we can put video of people on the screen, so.
Yeah, by 2000, it's like something you didn't do at all.
Yeah.
And they just decided, let's go for it. Why not?
Well, we're ready to rank.
Yeah. We don't have a choice. We've run out of game.
We compared this game to Katamari at one point. That's at number 4. That's kind of high, maybe. I don't know.
Nah, just put it at number 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Better than Super
don't
Mario
all
64.
Three of you agree?
Yeah, this game does have limited. I guess just you don't spend much time with it. It has difficulty levels. It has rankings if you care about that. But
mm-hmm. doesn't it have alternate routes? Like you have to play the game twice, see all the levels?
I think eventually you play all the levels in a single okay. playthrough, though you do have paths you can choose. You do eventually play all of them.
Is that how that works? I wasn't able to figure it out in the time I spent playing it, but
honestly, there's things about the game I don't understand even.
it's Suzuki Bakuhatsu is a mystery. But
it is very singular.
I will ask, does the game ever answer the central question of why she is getting blown up all the time? Is that just a mystery as well?
No. It is.
I mean, play it and find out.
Yeah, check it and see. Check it out at your local library if they're cool.
An exercise for the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty hard game to get your hands on, by the way. It's not in the usual suspects, so to speak. But it is around, or you can buy it online. I don't think it's too expensive. Maybe it's really expensive. I didn't check.
It's like $30.
That's a good price for this.
Yeah.
It's worth $30.
No idea where to place this. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, why did you start at Katamari? I'm sorry.
That's a little too high there.
It's so difficult to rate the game because it's like nothing else. You can't even choose a starting point.
No.
Like, what other bomb defusible games do you have on there?
Yeah, I'm just reading things and hoping something will pop out as...
I mean...
Oh, there's Silent... we could put it between Silent Bomber and Minesweeper to go for a theme there.
Oh, hey, there you go. The bomb section.
Yeah.
You can't put it above all these other games, probably. Like,
I guess it's not better than Mother 3.
Help me out here. You know,
it's better than Echo the Dolphin.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Oh, Kale's gonna get after you now.
You either like Echo the Dolphin or you're a jerk. That's the two states of Echo the Dolphin.
Echo the Dolphin is a jerk.
Oh, wow. Oh,
no,
oh,
the world is a jerk to Echo. Echo's just trying to help his pod.
Echo can't defuse a bomb. He doesn't have hands.
That's
Echo.
True.
Echo could defuse a bomb. He's got the brain.
He could use echolocation to figure it out much better than maybe.
I think he could. He's got a lot of powers. He's got those stars on his head. He's very clever. Okay. Going down just a little bit because we've got 138 is Ape Escape. I guess that's a PlayStation game at least.
Okay.
I mean, I don't have too many things. Like, really, the only problem I have with this game is that it's too much in Japanese for me to really make my way through it easily. Like, that's my only real problem with it. And it's short, but it can't really be a long game. I don't expect them to make this game a long game. It's an interesting art kind of game. It's not going to be it's not going to be a game you play for hours and hours and hours. It's just like, wow,
I have
glad
a crazy
I
idea.
Mm-hmm.
I could almost compare this to Her Story, since they're both puzzle games, kind of a weird interface and a weird way of going about doing things. You think we could put it above Her Story?
It should be above Her Story, first of all, yes. But where is Her Story? Let me find that here.
How many bomb oranges were in Her Story?
Not enough.
How many moons did you defuse?
Okay. Yeah.
That looks reasonable.
Yeah.
I think we're getting a good range here, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in the hundreds.
Yeah, I don't want to...
Somewhere in the hundreds.
Yeah.
Above Planescape Torment and Sonic Adventure and Crash Bandicoot 2. One.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
But right. Why do you invite these people on the show?
We're invited just to torment you, Cal.
Coming in.
They're
coming
like
in
the
list.
World Suzuki Bakuhatsu experts. I don't like the rules.
I know, and then this is what happens.
Well, I can't say anything definitively because, like hell, you can compare this to anything.
Mm-hmm. No, you can't compare it to anything. If it was we do have a mission statement about highlighting interesting games that you should play. That is part of the show's main goal is to recommend interesting games that are genuinely good, and that is correct. This game is genuinely good and interesting, and you might not have caught it because it was only released in Japan in the year 2000. So yeah, if that's where we all want it to go, above Her Story, is that's at 127 above Her Story. Is this the final lock in for Japanese?
Do
girl
we place it above the recently placed Dagger of Amon-Ra?
Well, I don't. Wow, this is really becoming the dense sort of lady protagonist area, isn't it? That's happening now. We're cramming that in there. No, because that's main.
Okay. How about, like, right between them? I'm okay with that.
Above Her Story and below Laura Bow. Is that...
What do you guys think?
Laura Bow 2.
That sounds good to me.
I'm okay with that.
All right.
Okay, well, high place of games. We're doing it. We're locking in. 127, I'm gonna grab the name again, because I cannot be trusted to say Japanese get names if I'm not staring at them. Suzuki Bakuhatsu, it's really, really great, if you like watching Japanese ladies get blown up, or you like defusing bombs.
You're making it seem a lot more grim than it is. it is not a grisly game.
It's the complete opposite. It's the most pleasant game about defusing bombs that I've ever seen. It's so nice. It's such an unbelievably nice game. I really enjoyed it.
And someone seriously needs to translate. We got Slowbeat with us, and I don't see him doing it. What are you doing, Slowbeat?
You can't just make other people translate things. This one's actually really tough because the text is all over the place. You'd really have to
You need to dub dig it, too. There. That's the
problem. Oh, if hey, fan dubbers, hire us, we'll do it.
I'll play Suzuki.
Uh-huh. I'll do a pro bono. No cash involved.
Here's a sample.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, a bomb.
Okay, but can you say Sugoi in the most deadpan voice possible?
Yes. Oh, okay. Sugoi.
Okay, let me
Perfect.
Try.
You're hired.
All right, let me try. Sugoi.
Oh,
that just sounded depressed. Which I guess she is, because, you know, she's defusing bombs all day.
We're
so,
having
yeah.
a Sugoi off over here.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rood, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.